It's time for a little good news today, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute of Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Mikes.
Glad to have you back from your presbytery meeting, so I'm not flying solo, which always scares me to death.
I apologize for not being able to help out some on that earlier, but some of the requirements of making sure that the peace and purity of the church is maintained pulls you into the late hours.
Well, Barry, you know, sometimes there is a higher calling than a radio show.
Oh, I don't know, Chuck. This is pretty high calling for both of us, I think.
Yeah, Saturday, of course, we've been running programs from Camp American. The only thing I'd have to do is just fill in the gaps for the time shortage on the class recordings. And we ran Larry Pratt last week. And if we have people who are curious about whether the right to keep and bear arms is a biblical thing, you need to listen to that broadcast.
Absolutely.
Which we'll have posted at www.principledpolicy.com sometime this week. Go back and listen to it. It's a very good show. I had a compliment the other day from someone I met who said, I've been listening to your show. And he had listened to the show that we ran, a Camp American class from Dr. Charles Rice.
Ah, yes.
On the just war theory.
Yes.
And we've got
that's a good one.
We've got some more Charles Rice sitting around in the archives, and we might dig that out and bring some of that back since that got such a good response. And we've got more Larry Pratt, and we've got more of everybody. So we've got hours and hours and hours worth. But we're going to be back to doing topics on Saturday, I think, in a couple weeks.
Yeah, after we finish up with camp.
Yeah, but until then, keep listening.
Okay. But today, Chuck, it's a new month, and folks, that's right, if you haven't got your registrations in for camp, it's www.campamerican.com. You need to register your young people because, as Chuck and I talked offline, it's filling up fast, and we're just about 3.5 weeks out from camp right now. Folks, you need to get your students registered and come up to enjoy this unique experience. But it is the beginning of a new month, and we'd like to start it. We don't have a whole lot in the mailbag, but what we do have is an update on an earlier program that we talked about where we actually have some very positive news, don't we, Charles?
We have very positive news. You and I were involved in making that positive thing happen.
We won't take too much. No. I was just there to kind of say, go here, do this, don't do that, and okay, let's see if we count noses.
Well, really, let's make it clear that the Real Water Carriers was a group that's been trying to push this bill through for now, what, probably about a decade?
Yeah, about 10 years now. Piece of legislation that we're talking about, folks, is House Bill 259. If you've been with us on this program for any length of time, you know that we've talked about issues regarding health care freedom and also the freedom to be able to choose alternative health care proposals, including your supplements and natural healing and remedies and things of that nature. And this is a bill in the Ohio legislature to basically carve out and say that these practitioners who practice what we call complementary or alternative modalities of therapy and healthcare are going to be protected from being harassed by out-of-control licensing boards such as the state medical board or the state dietetics board especially. Now, we talked about that in light of another issue that had been happening down in Charlotte, North Carolina. A gentleman by the name of Stephen Cooksey, who we reported on an earlier program, who was having a hard time to go with the North Carolina state dietetics board when he wrote on his own personal blog some information relating to his own struggle with diabetes and how he, through a diet and exercise and nutrients, ended up beating his diabetes back. And that didn't set well with the North Carolina Board of Dietetics and Nutrition.
And for instance, I'm familiar with cases very similar to this, which have gone to trial in Ohio with people being accused of practicing dietetics without a license. And people have beaten them in jury trials, meaning that there is a general will out there that people want to be able to go and get advice from someone other than someone who basically has a shingle out with a bunch of letters after their name saying that they're licensed by the state, because very often they don't trust the advice that's given by people that are licensed because it turns out not to be necessarily always such great advice.
True.
What this bill really does, it doesn't completely free up people who aren't licensed by the state to do anything they want to do. As we pointed out in a letter that I wrote and sent to the committee,
yes,
Health and Human Services and Aging Committee, what I pointed out is what this bill does, it actually requires the fence to be set in a set spot. In other words, it doesn't stop prosecutions of people who do the work of dietitians without a license or do the work of physicians without a license, or do the work of pharmacists without a license. What it does is it tells them the limits of their authority to come in, tell people what they can and cannot say. That's one of the problems that, for instance, this fellow, Stephen Cooksey, down in North Carolina ran into. As we described in an earlier program, basically he got a printout from his website with handwritten notes telling him where he was, quote-unquote, violating their regulations.
It was not necessarily 19 pages, Charles, 19 pages of printouts that had been marked up with a red pen and notated by somebody from the dietetics.
Exactly. And essentially what it said was, you can't give any dietary advice whatsoever. Well, for instance, one of the examples that I brought up was someone I knew who had gotten a warning letter who ran a health food store because they had advised someone who had a cold to take vitamin C. And because they sold vitamin C in the store, they were accused of practicing dietetics without a license. And amazing. The way the Food and Drug Code is currently being interpreted is that, for instance, telling people to take vitamin C for a cold, first of all, makes vitamin C into a quote-unquote new drug, the term that the FDA applies to anything that they want to regulate. And what that means is, A, that the health food store is distributing a new drug without a new drug license. That also means they're practicing pharmacy without a license, and it also means they're practicing medicine without a license because they are talking about how to treat a condition.
Right.
Well, and, of course, that's an absurdity, Barry.
Yeah, it is.
And that's exactly this buzzsaw of regulatory activity that Cooksey ran into. Let's not kid ourselves that, for instance, the practice of dietetics, there's a lot of money attached to that. There's a lot of medical money attached to that. People come in, are diagnosed as being diabetic. We're going to send you over to a dietitian who's going to design a diet for you. Well, Cooksey wasn't doing that. He was just basically saying, look, if you want to be healthy, eat meat and vegetables and cut back on carbs and grains.
Mm-hmm. And sugar.
This was the entire gist of his column, was essentially eat fruits and vegetables, cut back on grains and high carb items. Don't eat a lot of corn. Don't eat a lot of peas. That kind of stuff. The high glycogenic index stuff.
Sure.
Well, criminy, Barry, I could turn on the local TV station when Andrea Camburn was here and get the same advice from her. Now, did the dietetics board or the medical board harass her?
Of course.
No. She's not a trained professional. Why is she giving that advice? Well, they might claim, well, she consulted with a trained professional before she gave that advice on the air. Well, so what?
Exactly.
That's meaningless. You could just as easily say it doesn't matter who she consulted with. If Cooksey had consulted with a trained professional before he wrote his column, he's still himself not licensed. And he's still disseminating, supposedly, this advice that only a licensed professional can disseminate. Cooksey, of course, now has filed a federal lawsuit.
Yes, he has.
Basically charging a violation of his First Amendment right, that is the right to free speech. And he's exactly correct. Now, one of the things that HB 259, that just got passed by both this committee and the House pretty close to by what, a two-thirds margin, wasn't it?
Actually, I'm glad you asked that question because I pulled it up. On May 23rd, which was Wednesday, Health, Human Services, and Aging Committee passed House Bill 259 by a vote of 13-9, which was good because you need 12 votes in order to get it out of committee. So we were happy, and it was bipartisan because the bill was sponsored bipartisanly by a Republican and a Democrat, John Adams, the Republican, and Kenny Hugo, the Democrat. And so it had wide-based support, and then it went to the floor of the House of Representatives the very next day. Chuck, they didn't waste any time with this. You and I had talked about it, and honestly, I kind of got caught a little flat-footed because I wasn't sure they'd bring it to the floor, and I had been talking with people, and I know that we've had some other folks who were doing so as well, and we weren't sure if they were going to bring it up or not, but they brought it right to the floor the next day where it got a vote of 66-29, which is more than a two-thirds vote. This was an absolute knock it out of the park. And the other thing that's very important about this bill, Chuck, that's somewhat rare, is that all the way through the committee process and on the floor, both, this bill was not amended one time. In other words, the provisions in this bill, nobody wanted to tweak them or mess with them or add their little signature or thumbprint on this bill. They saw the bill for what it was and understood the issue. and said, okay, this is a good solution, let's vote for it.
And what's interesting about that is it had the benefit of having been amended in earlier forms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know you and I were involved in redrafting this bill that came forward, and we took a lot of that into consideration when it got redrafted.
Yes, we did.
And we took out some really, from when it was up before the last session, I had become involved very late in the activity and had testified as an interested person. Not as an opponent and not as a proponent, because I came in and testified that in its original form in the last session, what it did was it required anyone who was giving any kind of advice to have a patient sign a thing that said, you understand that I am a quack. It didn't say that exactly.
It didn't say those words, but the implication of how it was worded, you with very little other options of understanding it other than the fact of, I have to tell you that I don't have a license. And so if you are a patient of mine, well, I couldn't even use the word patient because you're not doctors. They're clients that you're consulting with. But the point is, the way this thing was worded last session, you're basically admitting I'm a quack, and therefore be very afraid of me and go running into the night.
Well, I've testified. I said, what this does is require the person who was giving the advice to admit that A, they're a quack, and B, that they're practicing medicine without a license, which amounted to the requirement that the person testify against themselves. And they had to keep the records for, I think, 5 years past the last time the person
I think it was 7 years.
Seven years.
Window.
And I said, this thing is so obviously unconstitutional that it's painful. And just as the activities of the North Carolina Dietetics Board were unconstitutional in the case of Stephen Cooksey. And that's Cooksey's whole point. Now, the reason why we're mixing the talking about these two items, Ohio now has the chance to rein in the Dietetics Board, not to put them out of business, because they serve a useful purpose.
Sure,
they make certain that the people who are doing this professionally, not merely as someone talking to someone else, that people who do this professionally, design diets, are trained in the things they should do. What it does is it says people you don't license, you can't sit on. They're not under your umbrella unless they are practicing your profession and claiming they're not hanging out a shingle that says dietitian. You can still sit on those people, and you should be able to sit on those people and prosecute them. But someone who isn't claiming to be a dietitian, you can't touch, because it's a matter of free speech. And it's a matter of just basically citizens communicating things that they've learned on their own with each other. That's not under your purview. Now, of course, we need to get this thing through the Senate. And unfortunately, we don't even have a Senate version offered up yet, as far as I know.
Well, no, but this is where my expertise comes in, Chuck. We don't have to. As a matter of fact, this thing's moved and got such a good vote, it's just now wiser to go ahead and run with the House version of the Senate. And some folks in the coalition have already been talking, and the chairman of the Senate Health Committee has already expressed his support for the legislation. And so, therefore, we might have a fairly easy time of it in the Senate. Because,
well, let's hope so.
And the bill's most likely, and I'm checking the registry right now, to see if this has been assigned yet over in the Senate, because they voted on this in the House about the last day that they were having session before they broke for a couple of weeks here over the Memorial Day weekend. So therefore, sometimes those things, it takes a little while to get them going. My guess is that we might be able to get it moving before they break for the summer. And if so, we might be able to possibly get this thing reported out and be done with it. And it's been sent to the Senate. And so we are now looking at having the Senate refer to a committee. So that's the next issue on the calendar. And obviously tomorrow, when people start coming back from their home districts and get back into the Senate, I'll be down there talking with people.
Very good. And our congratulations, by the way, to the Ohio Sunshine Coalition, who are the people who have been pushing this thing for literally about a decade.
Absolutely.
And we appreciate the fact that they let us in to throw our little spice into the mix. And I think we were able to help them in a lot of areas. Like I say, we didn't necessarily lead the charge, but we were definitely there in support.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we did when we first came in and talked to these folks about this, was offered support. The fact that it's their bill, but we saw some ways of making it better, and we had conversations, and everybody came to an agreement. And thankfully now, this bill is farther along than it ever has been.
Yep, way further. We've never even gotten it through committee yet. Now we've gotten it off the floor of the House. So good job, Sunshine Coalition.
Absolutely.
Barry, I want to thank you for the work you've done. Again, we're about out of time, but my company is a sponsor of this program. That's Rain Rock Nutritionals. You can find us at rainrocknutritionals.com, and we are a dietary supplement company. So I do have a vested interest in this, just so everyone understands that. I am a wholesaler for the most part, and my customers are the kind of people you would talk to who might recommend my product. So this is why I'm behind this bill and why I've put time, talent, and treasure behind it. Join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.